Hey, good evening, everybody. John Henry Soto here, along with George Batista. As always, welcome to Counterparts. Tonight, we have Sydney Scotia is going to be on the show. She's multi-talented, which I love because it means that there's an array of stuff that we can just talk about. Very excited. We're going to hear more about her shortly. So please, let's listen to some nice jazz, and then we'll come back and get the show started. And we're back. All right. So thank you very much for tuning in, everybody. We appreciate it and appreciate all of y'all. George, I know you have some announcements and some people that we want to give some love to and appreciate. So go for it.
Thank you, Mr. Soto. Yes. So the Counterpart Show is brought to you by Wellness Resources, a family-owned and operated nutritional supplement company providing the highest quality clinically formulated supplements since 1985. Find out why Wellness Resources supplements are the top choice of health-conscious individuals around the world. Go to myvitaminresource.com. And don't forget, when you enter the promo code COUNTERPARTS, you will get free shipping on all orders. Check it out.
Cool. Right.
Yes. So let's talk a little bit about our guest today. It's very, very exciting. We have Sydney Scotia with us. And Sydney has recently wrapped a series lead role in the Crave series Pillow Talk. She is best known for her role as Geneva in the Netflix comedy Some Assembly Required, for which she won 2 Joey Awards and earned a Leo Award nomination for Best Comedic Actress during its 3-season run. Sydney then went on to star in a Netflix series reboot, The Guardian Code, based on the cult classic cartoon. Other credits include CW's My Crazy Ex-Girlfriend and Hallmark's Eat, Drink, and Be Married. Along with acting and music, Sydney also pursues a career behind the camera with her feature-length documentary, This Hits Home, winning Audience Choice at the Boston Film Festival. This year, she makes her theatrical debut in Frank and Penelope, released in theaters on June 3rd. And season 2 of Pillow Talk is to begin filming in September 2022, and we are absolutely honored to have her on the program. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Sydney Scotia.
Ooh,
all right.
Hi, everybody. Hi, all guys. Right. Thanks for having me.
Yes, absolutely. This is our pleasure. Thank you so much. So that's a lot.
Thank you for the lovely introduction.
Absolutely, absolutely. George has been practicing reading for a while.
Yeah, finally learned how to read.
Finally, I got him to I gave him that role. But one of the things that always fascinates me about artists are multi-talented artists that, because I love music, I love writing, I love directing, acting. I've been in front of the camera a lot. And yet you'll get some people that are be like, you know, you should probably just pick one thing and kind of focus on that. And that's how they sound in my head anyway. So is that something that you run into? Like, do you kind of have that same, it's never stopped me, but you do get that sometimes where people kind of figure, you know, they're trying to put you into a little thing. I don't even know what it's called anymore.
Well, yeah, it's funny because sometimes I'll try to do that to myself even, and I'll say, maybe I should just focus, because I do tend to put a lot on my plate. At any given time, if I'm not overwhelmed, I feel like I'm not happy. I'm like, I need to be doing more. I need more on my plate. But then I sometimes look at myself and go, maybe I should, but I don't have a ton of people telling me that, thankfully, but I totally get where that comes from. And I have occasionally heard people say, like, okay, if you want to act, you just got to act. That's it. Right. Eat, sleep, and breathe acting. Or if you want to do music, you need to eat, sleep, and breathe. I think there is some truth to that, but then also to be a multifaceted artist is kind of what you need to do these days in order to stay competitive, maybe, and also just if it's what you like to do. No. I think it all comes down to the person. If it's what you like to do and you want to be doing a lot, then that's great. If you want to just do the one thing and eat, sleep, and breathe that, that's also great. It's your life.
Yeah, and it definitely comes down to the individual. But what's interesting is that back in the we're not that old, but back in the 40s, when studios would sign someone, they had to know how to dance. They had to know how to sing. They had to know how to act. You know, it was a requirement. You couldn't go to Hollywood if you didn't know how to do one of those things.
It's so true. And when I first moved to LA as a young actress, a lot of my auditions would be for multicam sitcoms or for Disney Channel or Nickelodeon. And I had workshops where teachers would tell me, okay, if you go into an audition, the casting director may say, okay, now do a little dance for me. Or do a song for me. And so, I mean, all my shyness as a kid had to go out the window, because if they're like, do a little song for me, I'm like, okay, what am I going to sing? Which is stressful.
Yeah.
But yeah, you needed to have those skills, or at least pretend to.
Yeah. And I think it also opens you up for more opportunities for, like, if you're an actor, but you a singer, I mean, that's also very melodic, you know. Dialogue is very melodic. There's a lot of rhythm in a scene. You know, I think it kind of all plays together. I think it's actually a really good thing. So George is actually the official question person. I'm usually not. I kind of just go with the flow, but George likes to write things down. I'm gonna ask him to ask something. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, just to kind of piggyback on what you guys were saying. So, you know, as artists, and John and I have talked about this a lot, as artists, we have to be constantly creating, right? It's just the nature of who we are. If I'm not creating something, I feel like I'm dying, right? Even this show was kind of born out of that thing. So I completely understand that whole concept of, you know, whether it's singing, dancing, film, and all that, just creating and having that vibe, which is great. Now, you, when you were younger, I know that you started dancing, right? You started dancing when you were younger. Mm-hmm. And how did, because I think I heard that was your first love, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now, how did the acting part come into that?
Well, okay. Yeah. So I started as a competitive dancer. Well, I actually started in gymnastics.
Okay.
And decided that wasn't for me at 5 years old, and continued tumbling and continued working on some gymnastics tricks. But I saw a dance studio and right across from my gymnastics gymnasium, and said, I want to do that. I saw these girls dancing, and they were performing, giving it their all, and they were called the Plum Dolls. And so I was like, I need to be a Plum Doll. That was my life's mission from that moment on. And so I just fell in love with performing and being on stage through doing that. And then at the studio, there was an acting class once a week. Oh, okay. And my brother would take that acting class. And so a couple times I sat in and watched them and just had the best time. They would usually do comedy scenes. And so I would just think that was amazing. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. And I would never go up and do one. But I would watch my brother do it and watch all the older kids. I think you had to be a certain age to do it. And so eventually I said, okay, I want to do it. I want to start taking acting classes. And then from there was an opportunity within the studio to audition for a local musician. When I was in Arizona at the time, was doing a music video, and they needed a little girl to cry over a Barbie doll. And so I booked the role. I was apparently the best at crying over a Barbie doll. And I went on set and waited in the desert for hours, a whole right over this Barbie doll, and absolutely loved it. I just knew that, okay, this is a career. This is definitely what I want to do. And from there, just kept training and kept going through school. And then when I was 14, my mom and I moved out to LA and started pursuing it professionally.
Wow, that's so awesome. You know, funny enough, George's first band was Plum Dolls. I think you were in there.
Oh my God. For a second, I almost believed you, and I wanted to believe you so bad.
You know, when you grow up with this guy, him and I are cousins. Okay. So we grew up together. So this is a whole life of this. Okay. So trust me.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been incredible, right?
It would have been incredible. Yeah.
I would have just kept it going, George. Don't lie. Just be like, yeah, I remember that. Those were, I hated those tights. But let me, I want to ask you about, because dance is there is acting in dance, because there you're telling a story with dance, you know. Right. There is an you're interpreting whatever the piece is.
Yeah.
And that has to communicate. So it makes sense that it kind of goes into that direction. Do you remember the first time you said, I want to get in front of people and I want to actually do this without dance?
You mean like in an on-set capacity or performing in theater?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the chance one summer. My mom gave me the option, okay, you can go to Dance Nationals, which was the biggest competition of the year, where all the dancers from all over the country and Canada would come to one city, usually New York or LA, and we would compete against everybody. And I had the choice to do that or to go to a two-week acting camp in LA at Occidental College. And so I chose the acting camp. And wow. We got to do intensive training every day, do scenes. And I remember loving it. It was a sleepaway camp too. I was 13 and just had the best time. Yeah. And so getting up and performing in front of everybody. And then there was a filmmaking portion of the camp, an acting portion, a dance portion, and something else. But we got to act in the short films that the filmmaking class was making. So that was the first time I got a chance to be on set.
Yeah.
Officially. And so that's when I really realized, okay, I can do this. I want to do this. And this is a viable career option. So, and I want to be on set with a bunch of people and just working 15-hour days for the rest of my life. Yeah. So that was kind of it. And then from there, someone at the camp said, if you want to do this, you have to be in LA. At the time, there were no self-tapes, not really.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's when I packed up. But that was kind of the moment, that choice between nationals and acting. It really was a good test for me to see where does my heart really lie.
Right. And it's a great age, too, because that's kind of like where I did a workshop in Jersey for 2 weeks. I taught this class and the kids were about 11, 12, 13. And really, when you get them in a classroom, there were about 22 kids. And when you get them in a classroom, you really, or in a setting, you know, not a class, mm-hmm. But in a setting, you really get to see who's going to be the director at some point, who's kind of like this leader, who's the leading man, who's the leading lady, who's supporting. And you don't have to tell them, because you never want to actually, tell anyone what they're going to be. But you see that develop through them. At that age, and it's really a wonderful thing that you were able to do that and mm-hmm. really find your voice within that. Did you find it difficult to make that move? Because I mean, moving to LA to me just seems like I'm from New York originally. I lived in Jersey and I'm in Nashville now. But moving to LA, I've been to LA. It seems like whoa. I mean.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
It's crazy, right?
Yes. Are you both in Nashville?
No, I'm in New York. I stayed in New York. He's the crazy one that moved to Nashville.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I mean, I've been to LA, and it just seemed like in New York there was a vibe where if you were a celebrity in New York walking on, I walked down the street, I'd see Al Pacino and Woody Allen just walking around New York, and nobody would even really approach them. But in LA, it felt like if that same thing happened, somebody would be out with a script and can I get a meeting? Can I get, and it's a little, is it difficult? I mean, to be out there. I mean, you're in the middle of it. I mean, you're still there. You know what I mean? How is it now compared to when you arrived?
Well, you're so right. And actually, over the past few years, I have been exploring other cities because I'm a dual Canadian American citizen. I spent a lot of time shooting in Canada, in Vancouver. And so during the pandemic, I made the big move from LA to Vancouver and then now go between Vancouver and New York mainly. But I still do spend time in LA and I've been there a little bit in the past few months. And when I first moved to LA, I thought it was so exciting, but it was kind of daunting because I was 14. I was just starting high school. I had finally made friends in middle school because I was always dancing after school, so I didn't have much time to hang out with people. And so I had this good group of friends that was all going into the same high school. And so I was really battling with, do I give up this friend group that I finally have and the high school experience, and do I go to LA and homeschool? But I just knew it was what I wanted to do. And even though LA was super, super daunting, I had a great time. My mom and I had a blast there. And it is very, everybody there is an entertainment, I feel like.
Right, right.
I mean, it is the entertainment capital in my mind.
Yeah.
At least.
It definitely is. I mean, it still is. I know people want to say other places. There are things happening in a lot of different places now. But it's like here in Nashville, you know, everyone is in the music business. Yeah. Everyone has a music friend. Everyone writes. Everyone plays guitar. Everybody plays guitar really well, by the way, which is crazy, you know. But yeah, I could imagine that must have been daunting those first couple of months there.
Yeah, and I knew nobody. Not a single soul. And so I just took a bunch of classes, as many classes as I could, and my parents were so supportive.
That's what I was going to say, because you had to have a supportive family to actually go through that, right? Were they in the business at all, or
not at all.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so my dad's a neurologist, and so not even in the same sphere, but my brother did dabble. He's a really good guitar player. He plays electric. And so he had a lot of like artistic passions that kind of inspired me growing up. So he paved the way a little bit and then went the academic route. But then I just knew I wanted to stay with the arts. And just everything about LA was crazy, because we must have gotten in 3 car accidents, none of which are our fault, in the first month of living there.
Wow.
It was just insane, because someone pulled out into us in a parking lot once, and then we were driving a rental, and then someone rear-ended us on the 405. So in stopping traffic. And so it was just really hectic. It's such hectic energy there, is the only way I can put it.
It is.
But in a great way. I mean, I go back now and it's nostalgic, having not been there, living there truly in a couple years, and I have a great time. But I definitely, I'm loving being able to bop back and forth between Vancouver, New York, and LA.
That makes so much sense. I mean, the time that I spent in LA, it is a fun place to go to and have some fun. And then you got to leave, because it gets so hectic. And the traffic is, I mean, everybody talks about the traffic, and that's a cliche thing, but it really does affect you emotionally, especially if you're a performer and you're trying to get to an audition. Like in New York, when I was going to auditions, I had my Metro card. You know, I had 3 or 4 auditions set up. They were 20 blocks apart. I make all of them.
Yeah.
Because my Metro car goes zoop, zoop, zoop. I'm on the subway. I'm there, and it's easy, you know. Mm-hmm. In LA, the stress level of having to drive to I can't even imagine.
And oh, then my gosh,
the fear of getting rear-ended and, you know, constantly is also like not fun either.
That was a crazy coincidence to get in that many accidents. So in the first little bit of living there, it kind of just, you know, we were like, okay, we need to calm down and
figure out what this place is about.
But yeah, I'm getting the hang of the New York subway system now.
Okay.
That was daunting at first too. That was pretty crazy. But yeah, LA, sometimes driving an hour and a half to Santa Monica to go to a 5-minute audition.
Right.
It's just every cliche about being an actor. You're like, okay, well, I guess I'm leaving all the way back to the Valley now.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours and then the 5 minutes that you spent acting.
Yeah.
Did you ever have thoughts that, you know, when you're going through all that, did you ever have thoughts of, was this a mistake? Or did you just like, no, I have to keep going, you know, that type of thing?
Yeah, I don't think I had a thought once that said, this is a mistake, because
that's awesome.
Yeah, I was just so determined.
Good for you.
Yeah,
I was definitely just so determined, and I was used to taking a lot of rejection. Okay. As a dancer, my first studio was like Dance Moms. It was actually just like Dance Moms.
Wow.
It's not that much of an exaggeration, that show. And So I was used to parents being like, she can't be in that class. She didn't like earn her way in that class, and then be bumping me down.
Oh, God.
So, and then going to competitions and then almost getting that top spot. So you get that taste of rejection, which was almost a good thing. So right. It just made me work that much harder. So I don't think I ever thought this is a mistake. I just thought, okay, next one. When's the next call coming in? When's the next audition coming in? Especially as a 14, 15-year-old.
And another thing that you mentioned, I just want to kind of mention really quick, is that there was some times where you had to make the decision where you said, okay, do I stay here and hang out, you know, and just stay with my friends, or do I actually make this move? And it's something I actually, just simple things like that, I even go through. I have a 15-year-old daughter right now, right? And mm-hmm. she does a lot of things. She plays sports. She plays, you know, she sings. She does a lot of different things. And I talked to her about when I was younger, when I was learning the drums and getting into music, I could have been playing out there with my friends, but I was playing 8 hours on those drums because I was so obsessed with getting good. Mm-hmm. And I could see the vision in the future of, well, I could see myself playing on stage and playing with this person and playing with that person. And I could see that you had that vision, which is something that I try to impart onto her because, and not that I force her to do anything, but I say, listen, if you want to get good at this, you may have to sacrifice time of hanging out because you really want this. And that's one of those things, right, that you went through.
Yeah, that's a difficult thing to just be born with. You know, especially when you have a good supportive family, it's really great, you know, they nurture that. But you have to miss the party if you want to actually achieve greatness. And if you want to be good at something, you have to miss the party because I guarantee you there's always someone's birthday is coming up.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And when you have a ton of friends, they're going to invite you to a gazillion parties.
Yes.
And if you say yes to half of them, the other half are going to be insulted. So say no to everyone. Why I have no friends.
The moral of the story is have zero fun. Right. Just wake up, grind, go to bed, grind. No, but it's hard. It's hard even now. I find it's hard to find a balance sometimes because I didn't know any different when I was that age because I was just having so much fun dancing and all the other girl dancers were and boy dancers, but our studio was primarily girls, were there 6 hours a day after school every day. And we all got waivers that said we didn't have to do school sports because we were dancing every day for 6 hours and on weekends. Oh, so we would get home and do our homework at like 11 p.m. and midnight. And so I just didn't know any different because that's what we were all doing at my dance studio. And when we were hanging out, it was at competitions. And so that was kind of it got me in the mentality, which can be, I mean, there has to be a balance, right?
Yeah.
Well,
sure.
Yeah. I was going to say that you have to love it because you know what I mean? You have to love it. That's the main point of everything because you can't really, you can't enforce creativity on someone that just doesn't want to be creative. You know what I mean? And so you definitely need to actually love it so much that you want to skip that party and say, listen, I'd love to go, but I got to learn this monologue. You know, I have an audition coming up. Listen, I love you. You're the best in the world, but I really got to go figure out this thing that I got to go, you know, maybe next week we'll meet for coffee and we'll do something. You know what I mean? You have to be balanced, but it also has to be communicated. So you end up with friends. Like I'm in Nashville. I have a wife and two kids. They're my only friends. George talks to me every once in a while.
Once in a while.
At least once a week. And that's it, you know, but it is that type of commitment that you have to have. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
Well, I'm sure you guys find that even with doing this podcast and doing this is like pretty much a full-time job.
Yes.
On top of doing so many other things and having so many other creative endeavors.
Right.
You guys choose to spend your time making this podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of work. A lot of my friends say, I'm going to start a podcast. And I'm like, good luck with that.
Right.
Fun, 'cause that is really hard.
Yeah, it is.
Especially if you want to expand it.
Yeah.
You know, George and I started this with nothing major, you know, but then we started getting guests that were like, oh, okay. Yeah. And then it started kind of snowballing into something that we're really excited about. But yeah, this is the live show that we do on Tuesdays. This week we're doing two other shows, recorded ones, that will air later. So we're constantly, you know, booking and shooting shows and stuff. So yeah, you're right. And it is something also that the reward comes from this here. Mm-hmm. This is like George and I talking to you. This is our reward. This is why we do it, because we're passionate about what we do. And then when we're talking to someone who's equally as passionate and doing it and out there, that to us is like, that's the, you know, that's the gold, you know, for us. So, and I have nowhere to go other than that, but.
Well, I know you have a point in there somewhere.
It was gold. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. And one of the things that George and I talk about also is that we want to make sure that the guests feel like we're with them on the journey. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. we're all on this journey. We're not, you know what I mean? It's a path that, and it doesn't matter what direction we're going in or what our interests are or our different, you know, forms of creativity. It's still a journey that we're all on. And so when we're on here, whether it's a writer, we've had medical people on, we've had, you know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame people on, yes. We've had like people that are just on this path. Some of them are far ahead. Some of them are starting out. Some of them are in the middle. Some of them are where, you know, and that joy for us is like, this is what the show is about. This is what being an artist is about.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. It's so true.
Are you right? You're right now in New York, or you're
I'm in Vancouver right now.
Vancouver, okay.
Yesterday.
Okay, cool. So let's talk about some actual stuff. First of all, I have to say this because my daughter will get mad. She's 11 years old, and A Mermaid's Tale.
Oh my god.
Was like her thing. She everything was mermaid. So she wanted to be here because she wanted to jump on, but her mother took her to the pool and my son to the pool. So they're there, but she wanted me to ask a question.
Okay.
Like, yay. You have to ask her this. Was the tail really heavy? This is what she asked me.
That's a good question, because I've been waiting for this one, because yes, it was really heavy, and it filled up with water. And so there were little like holes at the bottom that the water went out of, but there was water all in there. Oh. So by the end of the shoot, I had really nailed it. You know, last couple of days we were in the ocean and I had to do the big dive where the tail flips up, you know, and I go down into the ocean, and had finally nailed it. But it takes all your strength to go down and get that tail to flip up behind you. Yeah. And so, yeah. It was really heavy. I think that the tail was, 8 pounds just as is. But when it filled up with water, it felt like 20.
Wow. So that's heavy, especially when it's not, you know, we're not mermaids. You know.
Yeah, I know. I'm definitely.
If you were a mermaid, you wouldn't feel it. But wow, that is really something. So anyway, my daughter's name is Brianna. So Brianna, there you go.
Hi, Brianna.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks for the question.
Awesome. Thank you so much. George, do you have any questions? Because I feel like I'm...
Yeah, well, thank you for letting me chime in, sir. So tell me about when you first got your biggest gig, okay? How did it happen and how did you feel when you were like, okay, I'm here. I made it here.
This is it.
Yeah. Okay. I feel the need to preface this with a story about getting my biggest gig and then losing it. So when I was 14 in LA, I had been auditioning for this show, and it was a Hub network, which is, I don't think Hub is no longer a network, but I had known about it and I had been telling my agent for months, I hear this is going to be a thing. I really want to audition for it. I know another person on this network. I really want to do it. And finally, I get the audition. I nail it. I go to the testing session I'm the only girl there. There are 4 or 5 guys. And so I'm feeling pretty good that this role is mine. And my best friend is in the waiting room. And I say, you know, my best friend is in the waiting room. And he comes in and he tests the role with me. And then they send everybody home. And so at this point, I'm feeling really great. And then I book the role. And then that was my biggest gig. And it was a youth television show called Spooksville. And then after that, I'm waiting to hear some news. And a few months go by. Oh, it's getting pushed. Production's just getting pushed. You know, they need to find a new location or something. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's fine. Take your time. I am here and waiting. Right. And then 8 months go by. I packed up my apartment in LA. I've gone back to Arizona. I'm getting ready to move up to Canada where the show is going to be shooting. And then 8 months later, my best friend, who was going to be the lead, I was going to be the number four in it. And so that wasn't the lead, one of the lead guys or girls, but she was pretty much, she was one of the series regulars. Mm-hmm. And then I get the call that he's going up to Canada to test with other actresses. And so I am devastated. Oh. I've packed up my apartment. I've like changed my whole life for this role that I was so excited for. And it came down to, they needed a Canadian citizen with BC, who paid BC taxes for the tax credits.
Okay.
And I had my Canadian citizenship, but I didn't have my Canadian passport, and I definitely didn't have my BC residency. So from that point on, I said, okay, I'm going to get my Canadian passport, and I'm going to book another show in Canada. I made it my life's goal to book another show within, I just worked so hard. I remember that 6 months after finding out that I wasn't going to be on that show, making it my life's mission to get another show, which, I mean, it's not, you can't really manifest that stuff, but I just made it my life's mission. And then I got an audition for the show called Some Assembly Required, and they were looking for Canadian citizens. They didn't need BC residents, but they were looking for citizens living in LA and Canadian citizens all across. They did a nationwide search across Canada. Mm. And I remember seeing this and going, this is perfect. This is what I've trained for. There was a dumb blonde role and a edgy punk rock chick. So, okay, I'm going to go in for this edgy punk rock chick because that's the one I got the audition for. And went in with my Avril Lavigne, like, blue extensions and bracelets all at my wrist. And I did the first audition. It went really well. They called me back for the dumb blonde role and the punk rock chick, which, I mean, these are just stereotypes, you know, stereotyping these characters, but that's what it was.
That's right. Yeah.
It's a kid's show. And so I went back in and did the audition in front of the showrunners and was just, you know, oh, just hoping, crossing my fingers, toes, and my hair was braided for this role. And then I got the call that I got to test with other actors in Vancouver. So they flew us up, put us up, and we tested. We were there all day. And there was another girl there for my role, and she was from the Nationwide Search. And so there was two of each character there. Oh, and then I found out a couple weeks later that I had booked it, and that was just the best feeling. So I went up, visited the set of the show that got had gotten taken away from me, and went on set to say, hey, look, it's my best friend.
Wow.
I'm right here, just so you guys know, if you need me.
I mean, there's no hard feelings. This was ages ago, and like, it ended up working out fine. But yeah, I was like, I went on set, and it was so weird to see how different the shows were. But then I filmed the show, and then it ended up going for 3 seasons, which was awesome.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is so great.
It was the best. And just filming in Canada too, getting to grow up and spend, I booked it when I was 15 and then we wrapped when I was 18, and just getting to spend those years in Vancouver and finish out school up there was awesome.
Those are like really big years, because you're kind of going from sort of like the older teenage to 18, where you can vote, I guess. I don't know how it is up there in Canada, but yeah, that's an amazing story. But you know, you mentioned something about manifesting, and I'm always fascinating about that. You know, fascinated about it, because I do think that there are abilities that we have as creative individuals that we can actually extend ourselves to really get what we want. And it's not like this thing that's like, I gotta get this thing. You know what I mean? But it's like, I really want to do this. I love to do this. And I'm going to keep going because I know I'm going to get this. You know, I mean, that's a pleasant way of manifesting, rather than, you know, there's a lot of people that I'll meet that are like, they feel they deserve it. They're entitled to it,
right,
in some way, because they've put in all the years and they put in all this, and that doesn't necessarily ever, you know, mean anything, you know, unfortunately, right? But what was your thought process and your, you know, after you booked it and you started working on it, you know, did you kind of go back and say, wow, I was there and I did this, and then here I am and you're on set and you got the cameras, lights, action. Was it, did you really reflect on that?
I wouldn't say I was reflecting on it, but I would say that there was, I was very self-aware in filming that show, and I have zero regrets. You know how sometimes people are like, I wish I would have enjoyed it more, or I would have realized what I had. Right. Every moment that I was on that set, I just kept reminding myself how grateful I was. Mm-hmm. And I really was truly working the hardest I could work at every moment on that show. It was my first big opportunity, and I was just so excited to be there at any given moment. So
cool.
It really was like one of those moments where I was just was soaking it all up. Yeah. I really was. And so sometimes I'll look back on jobs and say, okay, I could have enjoyed that more. I could have done this differently or this, but with that one, I just, there's nothing that.
It was just meant to be, and it was just smooth sailing. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so, I just loved it all.
Yeah. But I think also, you know, like again, going back to the story of when you first got to LA and the accidents and all the stuff you were going through there, it does make you kind of appreciate it more.
Yeah.
And say, you know, I went through all that, but here I am and I got it. And, you know, now things are, you know, kicking on all cylinders, right?
Yeah. And I think losing that job right before did
make exactly.
Yeah. It like you said, makes you appreciate it more.
Yes.
Yeah.
The harder you work, the more you appreciate it.
And the more lucky you get too.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like what I've said here before on the show, like sometimes you'll look back and you're like, while you're in it, you're like, oh my God, this sucks. And, you know, and you're going through all this stuff and it's just challenge. But then when you look back on it, it's this beautifully crafted novel of a journey that you're on. And it's like, wow, that was beautiful. You know, at the time it was that, but looking back on it, it was like, it made me what I am right now. And it made me able to move forward.
Right.
Yeah, it's true. And there aren't days like, there are always going to be days where we're complaining about something or we're having a hard time with something, but that doesn't have to be what we focus on, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Afterward, we can look back and still say, okay, even though that was really freaking hard and kind of had some bad times within that, and sometimes jobs are like that or things we have to go through, we can look back and still say, oh, but I'm grateful for that. And all in all, it was a pretty good experience.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, excuse me, I said skim milk. Does it have a half?
Okay. Talk to me, though, when you go to a place with no almond milk.
Oh, no, I can't go there. No.
Horror.
Yeah, exactly. In my house, it would be the horror, yes.
Yeah, we love that stuff. I want to talk a little bit about Pillow Talk, and then we're going to get into some music. I saw... an episode, very funny, and I know that I saw an interview actually that you were on where you were talking about the show, and you were there with your co-star.
Yes.
How, because I think about that concept, and it seems like it has to be good writing. That's number one, you know, and it has to be humorous. It has to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like you had those elements there. You had to have good performances. You definitely had that. How was that experience for you? And how did you get that role?
That was kind of crazy. I had been really wanting to do another comedy, and this audition came along, and it was like a perfect storm. It just kind of all worked out. We had decided, let's audition together. And when I got the audition, they were looking for partners to audition, and I had gotten it as an individual because they released it to individuals. And so I was looking at this and thinking, oh, maybe we should just audition together. We did. And we ended up booking it, and we got all of our scripts in advance. And we're block shooting. And so basically that means that we're shooting all of our scenes in a row instead of shooting in order of the episodes. So all no other actors were there. It was just myself and my co-star. Right. And we got about 80 pages memorized before we even arrived. So we memorized it in the play. And then we got there and had to do scene after scene after scene after scene. No break, just lunch break, but on set all day, filming all day, memorizing pretty wordy scenes. So that was a new one for me. Definitely a new type of shooting, but I look at that project and I really like how it turned out. And I'm really excited to shoot season two because I've read a couple of the scenes from season two and they're so funny.
Oh, cool.
Good.
I may be a little bit biased, but I think they're so funny. And it is translated from their French series, Entre deux draps.
Right.
Not pronouncing that right. But it's translated from that. And so that series has already done really well.
Yeah.
Among the French-speaking community. And so to get to do that was really fun. And to get to do those roles for an English audience was a blast.
Yeah, and it's almost like, I mean, it is theater, you know, because you're confined in on a theater, on a stage, you're confined to that space. So you kind of have, I mean, you can move cameras around the room, but that experience must have been really interesting with your co-star also having a relationship. You know, I was going to ask you about that. Like, how did that, you know, you both got the gig and how was that, how did that pan out?
You know, it was actually great because who are you more comfortable with?
Right.
Yeah, it's true. Right.
Your partner. Right. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So
my wife would kill me, but our pillow talk would be like, did you take the kitchen, the chicken out of the oven? Don't forget that she's got horseback riding on the weekend. I'm not going to forget.
You know, sometimes the scenes are like that. They're just simple everyday things like, you forgot to do the laundry today.
Right.
Said you were going to do it.
Right. Well, the birth control one was like hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, no.
we had a blast, you know, and I thought it was just so perfect because we didn't need a lot of sets now have intimacy coordination, which there's someone on set making sure that everybody feels comfortable and that the scenes are. Which is a great thing, and that the scenes are choreographed so that people are comfortable, but we didn't need that because we were already in a relationship.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, and so it was really a great thing, and I do think it was such an interesting concept for the showrunners to
move
forward, because I think everybody in season one, they were real-life couples, but then there was a pair of roommates.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting dynamic to a relationship that people don't see. And I think that, you know, a lot of shows, they try to capture the overall essence of a big giant, you know, a big thing happening, right? But there's these little tiny moments. Like I wrote a thing a while back that I shot, and it was because my shoelaces broke. So my wife gave me a pair of shoelaces that she had, you know, it was brand new. So I took them and I put them in my shoe. Like a week goes by and she's like, did you get new shoelaces? I'm like, no, I got the shoelaces you gave me. No, but those are mine. I'm like, what do you mean? You gave me shoelaces for my shoes. I'm supposed to not go buy shoelaces. So we had this whole thing. Now, of course, at the time, I'm really upset that she wants to take my damn shoelaces that, you know, she wasn't using anyway. But I'm, you know, there's little moments like that you can really find humor in, because at the time it was an actual thing, but people don't see that in relationships, you know, they're, you know, or at least the outside, you know, it's always like this major thing. This pillow talk is really exactly what that is. It's pillow talk. It's that conversation that, you know, the fly on the wall kind of thing, you know, which really makes it interesting. And the writing, you could really have so much fun with the writing. I can't wait to see season two.
Yeah, it's true, because with the shoelace thing, you know, anything can be big in the moment.
Right.
And that's what, a lot of our scenes are. Wow. Well, I think that's a good problem to have. right. Shoelaces. Right?
Yeah, I'm going to keep them at the divorce, though. I'm going to keep them. That's awesome. That's awesome. So September 2022, you start shooting.
I can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be so awesome. We're already at 45 minutes.
Wow.
It's like whoosh.
Wow, that flew by.
I know. I want to talk about your music because I was like, whoa. And I heard ETA and, I heard a lot of the stuff on your YouTube channel. And my daughter actually knows ETA, by the way. I had it on. She's like, oh, I know that song.
I wish she was here. I wish your daughter was on the podcast. I
know. And I was like, they had this thing where they were going to go, but she'll definitely watch it.
John, sometimes you have to miss the pool to come and learn stuff.
You know what it was? When he gets all, I love you, Ben, my son Ben, but it was really Ben. Ben had to go to the pool.
Sure, blame it on me.
And it was, if he didn't go to the pool, he's 5.5 years old, so he'd freak out. So I blame him, even though I love you, Ben.
But wow, yeah. Amazing callback. Right. That was incredible.
So let's talk about your music. Obviously, you were in the dance, so music is a big part of already. It's already innate in you. When did you kind of say, okay, I'm gonna belt out a tune?
I started playing guitar when I was about 14.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
I was put in lessons and loved that, and would sing and play with my guitar and strum 4 chords and get by. And then I started really taking it seriously around 17. That's when I started taking vocal lessons, because I wasn't trained at all and didn't really have any sort of direction there, and had kind of an indie thing going on. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I started writing my own music when I was 19. So music came later, but I am loving it.
Yeah. Well, you're natural too. There's a naturalness when you're performing. And I think it comes from the fact that you're a dancer and you're an actress. So all that stuff just kind of comes together. Again, going back to what we started talking about in the beginning, it's why in the 40s and the 50s, the studios had the actors do that, right. Get that training, because you can be more of more free to actually communicate in different areas, So that was very, very well done. Are you planning like shows?
Well, I
band
really want to.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I really want to. That's kind of my next goal, is to do some shows with my original music. I haven't done one with original music. Uh-huh. And I would love to also find an acting role that has music in it somehow.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But I need to put a band together and do it. What are you guys doing?
Go for it. Hey, let's do it. Let's do it.
You guys want to come to Vancouver and do a show?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. Absolutely.
I got my passport. I think they'll allow me in there. I mean, I'm in Nashville right now, so here I could throw this pencil and hit a band. Whole band in one hit. So there's a lot of that here for sure. It's also a wonderful time to be in music and just to be in art in general, because the internet and social media and all that gives, if you use it correctly and you use it properly and you use it with the intention of really communicating positive music and getting your art out there, it really is an amazing time to have it. Because like you were saying, looking for a band, I mean, I'm pretty sure, I mean, we would love to go up to Vancouver, but I'm pretty sure that right in your area with some ad or something or whatever you would use, you can get a band for a rehearsal, get in, find out, audition guys, you know what I mean? And put that together. That'd be awesome. That'd be so fantastic.
It
you go to Nashville, you perform here.
It's an area that I don't have a lot of expertise in, is music and booking and venues and things like that. So, it's a challenge that I'm up for, and it's something I'd be excited to do. It just probably take a lot of planning, careful planning, attention, especially depending on the venue and what, sound checks and things like that. I'm kind of a perfectionist when it comes to that stuff too, especially performing my music.
Nice.
But it would be great. Yeah, it's definitely a goal within the next, it was my goal, my 2022 goal was to perform even a small show with originals.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I have a lot of experience in that area. It's with bookings, especially here in Nashville. I've been here for only a year, but I've met so many people here in that area, musicians and just, we had on Jessica Lynn a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And she was great. You know, she's got a band, she's touring, and it was great. So there's a lot of information there, and we'd love to help you any way we possibly can out of Nashville.
That'd be great.
Absolutely.
And George, I don't think he's going to be touring with Plum Dolls until next year, right? You guys are.
We're working on our next record right now.
The next record we're working on now, right? Yeah. So got to dust off those tights. So I want to kind of, we're already at almost an hour. I want to kind of ask you a couple of questions that we always ask our guests. And it's really for our audience, really, you know, that we do this. There are a lot of artists that are out there right now that the pandemic really put a damper on their plans. Mm-hmm. You had either two choices, right? You can succumb or you can rise above it and just keep going and try to do something, right? Mm-hmm. And the trying to do something about it, sometimes it's difficult to get to. And we find that talking to artists like yourself, we get that motivation, we get that inspiration,
yes,
you know, and we understand that there are others out there kind of getting it and doing it. If someone was out there right now, they're kind of watching the show, maybe they've been planning on getting that, finishing up that script or starting to audition again. I got actor friends in New York that haven't auditioned anymore because they don't want to go out. I'm like, dude, you got to get your ass out there. I'm like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
And it's really, really sad. You know, what piece of advice would you give to someone out there?
I think making your own opportunities sometimes is key. And right now there are so many chances to do that. With the pandemic, there came a lot of online opportunities. Mm-hmm. And there are ways to create your own film professionally or not professionally and put it in online festivals and put your screenplay in writing competitions. And I've found that if meeting one new person can make all the difference. So really putting yourself out there to make those connections and talking with other creatives can just be inspiring as well. But I would say making your own opportunities, whether that's writing your own project, making your short film, writing a song, just one thing a day. I try to do one thing a day, whether it's writing something or submitting something, anything.
Yeah.
To just make some progress, it feels great.
Yeah, and I love that. The one thing a day, I talk about that a lot. You know, if you move the needle forward just that much, every single day, you're going in the right direction.
Yeah, because it sounds cliche, but it really is just about the journey. It's really,
right,
if you're having fun along the way and having a great time, people are going to see that. People are going to resonate with that. And that's all that really matters.
Yeah.
But it does sound so cliche because everybody make the next big thing and make the next big project. But if you're doing something and pushing it forward, that's impressive.
And enjoy it.
Yeah, enjoy it. Because it is really hard work. So pat yourself on the back sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. During the pandemic, I finished editing. I'm not an editor, but I took like online courses to learn how to edit during the pandemic. I learned how to edit. I edited my film. I made the music, put it together, sent it out. And this year, it's been in four film festivals so far. And I submitted to five, and I got into four. So I was pretty happy.
Wow, congrats.
Yeah, so thank you. And so what you said, the first thing you said, make your own way, make your opportunities. That was like the key thing for me. So thank you so much for that. Appreciate it. So, wow, we could probably go on and on because you have a wonderful energy. You have wonderful creative ideas and spirit, you know, and that's something that always comes through whenever we do these shows. We always just feel that energy, even though we're so far apart. Mm-hmm. Again, making opportunities, right? That's why we're here. We're doing this this show, and to be able to share those moments. So we really appreciate you taking the time to be here. This is your website. It's on the screen there. Everything's going to be on the description below. I go like this, like it's, I don't know, but it's somewhere. It's going to be there, right there. It's there. And please make sure you follow her on social media. She's on Instagram. I think I just started following you, on Instagram as well. And we're going to keep an eye on you. We're going to support you. And anything that you need from George and John from Counterparts, please let us know. We are here to help you any way that we possibly can. And I could play the tambourine. if you need a tambourine player, I'll do it. I don't got to play guitar. I play tambourine.
I do need a tambourine player.
Yeah. George does a mean triangle. So
well, thank you guys so much for having me. And thank you everybody who watched.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is great.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening, and we'll talk to you soon. Actually, hang out for 1 second, and we'll be right back.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow.
You see?
This is why we do this.
This is why we do this. It's because you get energetic. Like right now, I just feel like I want to go dancing. I'm not going to do that because my back, but I want to kind of just try it. But anyway.
I want to grab a triangle, just so you know.
Yeah, there you go. Triangle. I'll get my tambourine. We're ready to go up to Canada. All right, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in. We appreciate all of you. Please check us out next Tuesday, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we have a lot of surprises and a lot of great guests coming up. So please follow us on counterpartsshow.com and get all the information. So we'll see you again. Take care. For George Batista, John Henry Soto, Counterparts, and everybody here, as always, peace.
Peace.